Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 4, Ambarish Maharaj offended by Duravasa Muni, Text 25. Samvarya Dayanti Yatkama Swaraja Paribhavita Durlabha Napi Siddhanam Mukunda Ridhi Pashitaha. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Maybe you're out of batteries or something. Those who are saturated with the transcendental happiness rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are uninterested even in the achievements of great mystics. For such achievements do not enhance the transcendental bliss felt by a devotee who always thinks of Krishna within the core of his heart. So please repeat. Those who are saturated with the transcendental happiness a rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead are uninterested even in the achievements of great mystics. For such achievements do not enhance the transcendental bliss felt by a devotee who always thinks of Krishna within the core of his heart. Purport. Pure devotee is uninterested not only in elevation to the higher planetary systems, but even in the perfection of mystic yoga. Real perfection is devotional service. The happiness derived from merging in the impersonal Brahman and the happiness derived from the eight perfections of mystic yoga, anima, lagima, prapti, and so on, do not give any pleasure to the devotee. As stated by Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati, Kaivalyan narakayate tridashapur akasha pushpayate dordantendriya kalasarpa patali prokata damstrayate vishvampurna sukayate vidimahendri dishtat kayate yat karuna kataksha vai ba vavatam tam goram evas tumaha. When a devotee has achieved the position of rendering transcendental loving service to the Lord through the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, he thinks the impersonal Brahman to be no better than hell, and regards material happiness in the heavenly planets to be like a will of the wisp. As far as the perfection of mystic powers is concerned, a devotee compares it to a venomous snake with no teeth. A mystic yogi is especially concerned with controlling the senses. But because the senses of the devotee engage in the service of the Lord, Rishikena Sevanam Bhaktir Uchate, there is no need for separate control of the senses. For those who are materially engaged, control of the senses is required. But devotee's senses are all engaged in the service of the Lord, which means that they are already controlled. Param drishva nivartante. A devotee's senses are not attracted by material enjoyment. Even though the material world is full of misery, the devotee considers this material world to be also spiritual because everything is engaged in the service of the Lord. The difference between the spiritual world and material world is the mentality of service. Nirbandha Krishna Sambande Yuktam Vairagyam Uchate. There is no mentality of service when there is no mentality of service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one's activities are material. Prapanchi Kataya Buddha Hari Sambandi Vasuna Mumukshubi Pratyago Vairagyam Valgu Katyate Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1-256. That which is not engaged in the service of the Lord is material, and nothing thus engaged should be given up. In the construction of a high skyscraper and the construction of a temple, there may be the same enthusiasm, but the endeavors are different. For one is material and the other spiritual. Spiritual activities should not be confused with material activities and given up. nothing connected with Hari, Supreme Personality of Godhead, is material. A devotee considers all this is always situated in spiritual activities, and therefore he is no longer attracted by material activities. Param dvishva nivartate. Those who are saturated with the transcendental happiness are rendering service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, are uninterested even in the achievements of great mystics. For such achievements do not enhance the transcendental bliss felt by a devotee who always thinks of Krishna within the core of his heart. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Vristaya Buddhaya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatun Deve Gauravani Vicharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskya Dhyade Siddharane. Here the glories of being in devotional service are explained, and that devotional service is not only what we're doing externally, but it's also what we're thinking about internally. That everyone has some kind of mood of service. Either we have the mood of service to our material body and things in relationship to the body, or we have a mood of service towards Krishna, which doesn't mean that we give up all the other services, but we do only those services that Krishna wants us to do. In other words, in the material world, service is there, but service is being demanded to us by different external forces under the three modes of material nature. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sattvam rajas tamayiti guna prakriti sambhava ivananti mahabaho dehe dehinam avyam. So what appears to us be a pastime, our pastime, in other words, we're just passing time, just like sometimes people pass air, so we pass time. Nothing is really gained very much by such activities, except that we just waste our time. If the time is not spent either towards spiritual elevation, which basically speaking means to get out of our ignorance, or engage actually in the positive activity of devotional service. So the pastime in the material world of what we think is our, well, whatever it is, friendship, romance, whatever it is, society, friendship, and love. It's just three modes of material nature. And according to the mode of material nature that we're engaging in, there's a certain experience in the material world which goes under the name of society, friendship, and love. But factually, it never really gives us the same or the satisfaction that we're looking for, because it's ultimately only our conception of things. Now, it's not that there's no reality to the material world. Everyone knows there's some kind of reality to what we're living in, but it's not quite the reality that we think it is, that's all. Even the scientists tell us, we believe the scientists, but we have to trust them somewhat, that 99.9% of what we're perceiving is just space. Although it appears quite solid to us, but we can see, if it was solid, then why is it always flickering and changing at every moment? So we're engaged in a big light show in the name of reality. In any case, since we take it seriously and we're very much enthusiastic to serve the demands of our senses, just like one man, true story, he was in Howrah train station in Calcutta, and he was looking for cigarettes on the train tracks, and one train came along and cut his body in half. So one man came and said, "Can I do anything for you?" He said, "Do you have a cigarette?" So he's about to leave his body, and Obviously, there might be something better to do than smoke a cigarette. But for him, smoking a cigarette was the goal. And maybe in his next lifetime, he would come back as a tobacco plant. So people have their conception, and they're working towards it, and they think it's very important. Because that's their reality, and therefore that's the service that they're rendering. Generally speaking, it's the service. The main service is either the impulse is coming from the tongue, or the belly, or the genitals. And then following that comes the mind, anger, and words. So serving the impulses that are arising to material nature, we take as reality, and we take as progress, or the goal of life. But Krishna says, Chintyama Parayam Cha Pralayantam Upashitya Kama Paboga Paramam Etavam Iti Nischicha. They believe that to gratify the senses until the end of life is the prime necessity of human civilization, and therefore there is no measurement to their anxiety. So it is not that one becomes more and more expert at gratifying the senses, then one becomes more and more peaceful and happy, very much different. The more one tries to gratify the senses without restriction, the more one becomes full of anxiety, because the senses are never satisfied and they burn like fire. Trying to put out a fire by throwing gasoline on it is not a good or sane process of putting out a fire. It simply will increase the fire. Or trying to satisfy a snake by feeding it milk and bananas will simply increase its poison. On the other hand, one has to do something. Nahi kaschit chenamapi jatu tishtate karma krit karyate yavasha karma sarvaprakriti jagana. That all living entities, they're forced to act. Just like I was just forced to move my hands. No, I wasn't forced. Krishna told me to do it. Yes, I guess I should. And I obeyed him. At least during class, I'm a little submissive. Oh, being forced to act helplessly according to the three modes of material nature that we're situated on. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, even for a moment. And at the same time, this belief to gratify these senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. There's no measurement to how much anxiety someone could be put into. Therefore, when we see someone is crazy, it actually took a lot of endeavor to become crazy. You have to practice it over many lifetimes before you become officially crazy. Especially since there's so many other crazy people you had to compete against. And you're only considered crazy when you're more crazy than the other crazy people. It's only noticeable. Otherwise, you're considered quite normal. If you're just normally crazy, you're considered normal. Now, on the other hand, half of Bhagavad Gita deals with conquering the mind. So Krishna says we have to conquer the mind, which means basically we have to conquer two things, hankering and lamentation. Now, who besides a few devotees, or devotees who are aspiring to become devotees, are actually trying to conquer over hankering and lamentation? That is life to people. Even their happiness is hankering, oh, I love her, and then the song plays on. And then the other half of the song, oh, I'm sorry she left me, and I'm just feeling so blue. And everyone goes, yeah, me too. So that's life. People, they love hankering. That's life. And they also like lamentation. They like to feel sorry for themselves, that they were the hero or the heroine. That's lamentable. That's another rasa. Shoka rasa. And one follows another, and people love it. We've been here in the material world since time immemorial, and all the species of life, hankering. Even as the amoeba, here's another amoeba, I'm going to swallow him. Oh, I swallowed him, he tasted so bad. I'm lamenting as amoeba. Maybe I should spit him out, but he's too big to go out my throat. I don't have a throat anyhow to spit them out. So in every species of life, we're hankering and lamenting. So Krishna says, Arjuna was complaining to Krishna, or at least lamenting to Krishna, that it's very hard to control this mind, because it's so conditioned. As a matter of fact, when I think I'm doing something good, it's just due to my conditioning, and the rest of the time I just do things that I think are bad. But I'm just conditioned to either do things that are good or bad, at least in the material world. Because it's all centered around my false ego. Even when we become devotees of Krishna, we have a hard time remembering, actually I'm doing this to please Krishna. We watch ourselves, what we think is ourselves, doing something, we think, yeah, I'm so good, I can't believe it. I can't imagine how much Krishna is getting happiness because I'm doing things so nicely. I'm not even trying to please him, but of course I'm pleasing everyone because I am what I am. So most of the time we don't even think I'm doing this for Krishna because we don't even think Krishna's there. We forget Krishna is even somewhere around us, like in our heart, in every atom. We just forget. And therefore, generally, we're driven in our daily activities just doing things, doing. Especially when it comes time to taking prasadam, you know, if we can actually even do it properly, that would be great advancement. But we're just, rah, rah, rah. more. And Krishna goes far, far away. Until afterward when we have his stomach, oh, Krishna, help me. I'm suffering, I'm innocent. I ate your prasadam and this is what I get. So we have to, as Arjuna Krishna tells us, yes, it's going to be very difficult. It's a journey of self-realization. It's a journey, and in that journey we have to learn how to conquer the mind and how to do it. Arjuna Krishna says, Asamshayam mahabaho, mano dir nirgraham chalam, abhyasena tikuntiya, vairagena chigriyate. It is very difficult to curb the restless mind, Arjuna. But it's possible by suitable practice and by detachment. So suitable practice is what we're doing, or at least we're trying to do. But we have to, when we actually suitably practice, then we'll see Krishna everywhere, every moment. So we're practicing to suitable practice. We're trying to increase our skill in whatever we're doing, in the nine processes of devotional service, especially hearing, chanting, and hopefully we come to the platform of remembering. Remembering means realization, because we can hear, and then we could try to practice, and then Krishna says, if we're practicing appropriately, as Krishna says, suitable practice, which means, tesham sadatam yuktanam, bhajantam priti purvakam, tadami buddhi yogam tam, yena mam upiyantite. So two things, care and attention. Consistency, which means attention, attention to Krishna, and carefully, out of love for Krishna. Done very nicely to please Krishna. Doing how Krishna would like us to do it. That's what's pleasing. How do I know it's pleasing to Krishna? Because Krishna will give me the intelligence how to do it. Dadami buddhi yogam tam, in such a way that's pleasing to him. If I'm eating prasadam, for instance, which is one of the pastimes we like, then, you know, I can eat in any ways I want that the modes of material nature dictate to me. I can eat like a tiger. Rawr, 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 rawr. Don't get near me. Or I can eat like a pigeon. I can eat in any number of ways. I can eat like a hawk. Or I can eat like a devotee. You know, in a mood of appreciation, respect, remembering Krishna, trying to taste Krishna's presence in the food, his energy, spiritual energy. So I can do it in any way. And Krishna, dadami, buddhi, yogam, tam. I can do it very carefully, And carefully means I could actually, before I eat, I can think about how much I can eat that my eating will be successful. That at the end of eating, I'll actually think I was successful. Yuktahara viharasya, yukta cheta sukarmasu, yukta swapna vodasya, yoga bhavati dukaha. A devotee doesn't eat too much or eat too little. Not that today I was successful, I didn't eat anything. I'm now a good person because I starved myself to death. I got this sinful body and I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to starve it, you sinful body. I'm going to take care of you. No, we have to eat what's required, yuktahara. As Prabhupada said, if you're an elephant, then you should eat like an elephant. If you're an ant, you should eat like an ant. But if you're an elephant, you eat like an ant, you'll get into difficulty. You never hear an elephant said, I lost 300 kilos, I feel a lot better than that. No, he has to eat what's necessary to maintain the elephant body. And if you're an ant and you're trying to eat like an elephant, then you'll get into a lot of trouble also. So yuktahara, as much as we actually need. Then we're successful. At least that much our eating is successful. If we don't take that in consideration, we think success is today, yesterday I had 5 gulab jamuns and today I was more successful because I got 15. And tomorrow 20, and who knows, I'll enter into the contest. There's one devotee, I remember, in Radha Damodara, we used to have these contests, and there was one devotee from the library party. His name was Ganesham at that time. He was later on, when he took sannyas, he was Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj. So there was a contest, how many gulab jamuns can you eat? So he got the record. He ate 80 gulab jamuns in one sitting, which was all right. But then he had to go to the hospital. So he won the contest. He also won a trip to the hospital. So we have to look at our prasadam before we eat it and think what will be success. That we actually, and to actually see how much can I actually eat? And probably take it, have that, how much we think we can eat. Because after all, as I said, our stomach is only the size of 2 fists. That's not fair. Well, that's about where it fits. I thought it was this big. Well, it's beyond your body. Unless you're eating ether or something. And then we actually have to chew the food, because if we don't get any pleasure from eating, and at least exercise our jaws, because we don't. Generally speaking, we can see when we sit down with other devotees, and as soon as our jaw starts moving and our tongue starts working, then immediately our mind starts remembering so many things I had to say. And then we exercise in our tongue 10 times more than necessary when we start eating. But we have to exercise our jaw also, so we can actually chew the food, so we can actually taste it. Did you ever try and taste an apple, if you just swallow the apple without chewing it? I once saw a movie, a 3D movie, and they showed a stomach. I guess they had the 3D camera in the stomach, and it showed food coming, dropping down into the stomach. One of the foods that dropped down into the stomach was a whole apple. For demonstration purposes, I guess. So we have to chew. We have to find out how much we can eat. We have to chew the food. We even have to wash our hands, because otherwise there may be some little insect in our hands, and we're not supposed to eat insects. And we have to, so many different things go into eating prasadam, and if we choose the right environment and the right way of doing it, then we will actually be able to think about Krishna. And we make it as easy as possible to do the things that will make our thinking about Krishna successful in the short term, in the long term, then that's called a good habit. That's called suitable practice. And also detachment. Suitably practicing what we should be doing, sit down, clean body, clean mind, clean hands, say the prayer, thinking about Krishna, chew the food, thinking about Krishna. So that's suitable practice. And detachment from all the other distractions. You know, I want to listen to this, I want to listen to that, I want to talk about this, I want to talk about that. I just remember some gossip I heard and I haven't told anyone about it. It's just on my mind. I got to get it off my mind. So detachment. No, I'm doing the right thing in the right way, so let me continue on and just concentrate on Krishna. And that's the success. I made it as easy as possible to think about Krishna. And at the end of this activity, I'll even become encouraged to think about Krishna more. So suitable practice and detachment so that we can do our service with care and attention. Focus on what we're supposed to do and not focus on. Then we won't have to focus on, we won't have to worry about focusing on what we're not supposed to do. Do it with care and attention, do it with care, and we'll get a higher taste. Krishna will reciprocate with us because we've done it in a loving way. Didami Buddhiyogam Tam. That's what he's giving us intelligence, how to do the service with a service attitude towards Krishna. That's spiritual intelligence, how to do it very nicely. Krishna likes to see that we do it very carefully, very beautifully. In every aspect, Srimati Radharani cooks very carefully, with great care, with great love. And that's what Krishna wants. And her love is manifested in everything she does is very expert because she wants to do it the best way possible to please Krishna. And Krishna is not far away. He's in our heart. He knows our sincerity. And if we sincerely try to please him by the activity, do it as nicely as we can, then he's pleased by that sincere desire. And that's what he loves. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
It happens sometimes that you get overburdened by seva, by services. How can you manage that in the most critical points where you feel like, you know, you just want to drop everything and leave? You just feel like, you know, it's too much sometimes.
Well, if it's maybe too much. Therefore, before we do, we should plan the day in such a way that throughout the 24 hours a day, we cannot help but think about Krishna. So I don't know who's giving you service to do.
It's in general. Like, sometimes I overburden myself. Like, I want to do that.
Well, write down everything you want to do, and then see how long it's going to take it, and make a plan for the day. Make prioritize what you have to do, what you want to do, what you can save for the future, and then fit it into a schedule. So the mind's peaceful, and at the same time, you're not overburdened. Because it's atihara prayasis cha prajalpa niyamagraha. Generally, we over-endeavor because we want too many things. And then there's prayasis. And then there is prajalpa. So then we start, I'm unfair, I'm a victim, whatever. Talk about it. But we take shelter of Krishna and plan out our day in such a way as we do what Krishna actually wants us to do. He doesn't want us to be a victim. The modes of material, when we take shelter of the modes of material nature, naturally we become a victim. And then we blame the material nature or we blame Krishna because we chose the wrong thing. It was our choice. We can choose Krishna and then he'll tell us, sit down, write down everything you have to do, see what you have to do today, what's your priorities, etc. And make a schedule. And make a schedule for the things that you want to do in the future and that you have to do in the future and when to do them. But you only have 24 hours a day, so fit in what you can in such a way as you can comfortably do those things that are necessary.
Yes, thank you.
Anything else?
internet Maharaj.
Okay, next.
So Avadhuta Rai Prabhu is asking, there are various opinions about fasting on Nirjala Ekadashi. Bir Krishna Goswami, for example, says it is not good for the liver not to eat and drink anything. Rohini Sutta Prabhu says Nirjala even without water was introduced in ISKCON later in history. Still some other devotees follow it enthusiastically. So the question, what is the standard to be followed? That's the first.
What's that? Tomorrow's a Nirjala Ekadashi.
Yes.
Well, the best thing, Prabhupada said, the first tape I heard Prabhupada discussing Ekadashi was Prabhupada said that in Vrindavan, the devotees, the great devotees, on Ekadashi, they don't eat, they don't drink, and they stay up all night chanting Hare Krishna. And then the next thing I heard probably in another tape, Prabhupada said that today is the celebration of such and such devotee, great devotee, we should fast half a day. So I had the temple, every Ekadashi we were fasting, every appearance day was a half day fast. So every other day was a half day fast till the devotees started to leave the temple. First it was someone's wife, and then he followed. Then we rethought. And then for a while there on Ekadashi, Prabhupada sometime heard about some of the strange austerities that the devotees were going through. And Prabhupada said, Ekadashi means feasting. So then we were having these really nice feasts on Ekadashi. Everyone was looking forward to Ekadashi. We're not, oh my God, Ekadashi. Torture, another day of torture. Another day of meditating on prasadam in my stomach. So then Krishna Balaram Swami, who used to be a Swami in our society, he wrote this book called something about Ekadashi. I forget the name of the book. And it was all from the Karmakanda section of the Vedas about all the rewards you get from Ekadashi. And one of them was Bhima Ekadashi. That Bhima, because he had a voracious appetite, he used to eat enormous quantities of food. And I guess even Ekadashi, he found it hard to just follow it very strictly. So it said that he got the benediction that if he fasted on Nirjala Ekadashi, Bhima Ekadashi, then he'd get the results of all the other Ekadashis, following all the other Ekadashis. So then it became the standard, the in club in ISKCON, that if you actually were, you know, in the in club, then you fasted every Ekadashi, not just Nirjala Ekadashi, but it was every Ekadashi. Those who were almost on the inside, they fasted on Nirjala Ekadashi. But the really inner circles of ISKCON, the elite, the Illuminatis of ISKCON, that they fasted every Ekadashi, Nirjala Ekadashi. But the problem with that, because I used to be on the inner elite, believe it or not, for a little while. The problem is we fasted the whole day. I mean, I remember one time I think I chanted like 160 rounds or something. Because then you also had to chant a lot of rounds. You had to get up to Namacharya, 196 rounds. And the problem was we'd stay up all night. We'd have some reading. Sometimes it degenerate into some kind of prajalpa in the middle of the night just to keep ourselves awake. And then at the end we go to Mangalarti. You know, I remember standing there, somebody in front of Krishna Balaram or other deities, in front of Prabhu Samadhi, thinking, oh my God, I can't wait, this is over. This is really difficult. And then at the end we got, you know, we had our milk, you had unlimited quantities of milk you could drink, and then crash for some hours. So then after some time you figure out, you know, this kind of roller coaster thing between fasting and feasting is probably not very healthy. there may be, you know, some great personalities like Krishnadas Babaji, Krishnadas Babaji, who, you know, naturally was situated in transcendence, and he was able to follow a codicil like that regularly without any problem. But as far as Prabhupada said, as Prabhupada writes in Nectar Devotion, codicil is meant for, we fast in a codicil so we can increase our service to Krishna and our chanting of the holy name. He didn't recommend chanting, especially if you had fasting, in such a way as it interfered with one's devotional service. That wasn't the idea. It was to increase our hearing and chanting. Now, if someone's gotten used to doing Niyojala Kadasi, it's so much the better. But it should be, it shouldn't interfere with the next day or the rest of one's service. It should just be a natural thing. And if not, if becoming too austere means that our service is being impeded, and even our remembrance of Krishna is being impeded, then what's the point? What are we doing it for? Maybe you'll lose some weight but with that attitude, but you'll probably gain it back the next day. Yes?
Is fasting on Ekadashi started on the Titi, the day before, in the evening, Ekadashi Titi, or actually in the sunrise of the day on Ekadashi?
Well, it begins on the day, the rising of the sun on the day of Ekadashi. The Titi, whatever the Titi is there because of the sunrise. And sometimes we have to celebrate Dwadasi because in two sunrises it's the same titi, and therefore we celebrate Dwadasi instead of Ekadasi because Ekadasi doesn't manifest itself.
Because I heard some devotees on the night before, they would drink like a couple of liters of water like a camel. Just a store.
Great. Fantastic.
And hydrate.
Yeah, anything but remember Krishna.
Yeah,
we do one thing in order to counteract something else, and we wind up having to do something else to counteract that. If you drink so much water, you can't go to sleep. Then you try to stay up all night chanting. You can't stay awake, so you bang your head against the wall. All for love of God.
How is it that Nirjala Ekadashi, if you don't drink water, I mean, in Bhagavad Gita it is said that I'm the taste of water, yet we don't drink water and we don't remember.
Well, Krishna says I'm also sex life, not contrary to religious principles. So we don't follow, every verse is not meant for everyone at all times. There are certain, you know, restrictions according to time, place, and circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
Although if we drink water when it's authorized, if that's our determination, then we should remember the taste is Krishna. But also he's the light and the sun and the moon. So if you want to remember Krishna and you're not drinking water, you can look at the sun and moon too. You don't have to drink water to remember Krishna.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else?
Brahma says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, only those who have attained a particle of mercy from your lotus feet are able to understand your real glories. So the question, does this refer also to the neophytes or only the Madhyama and Uttama devotees?
Those who have understood a particle of your lotus foot.
Those who have attained a particle of mercy from your lotus feet are able to understand your real.
Well, everyone has to get a little bit of Krishna's mercy, otherwise, what are we doing here? Except even Prabhupada gives the example of the thief who was on pilgrimage. He just had a tendency to steal, so at night when everyone was sleeping, he got up because he had to steal, so he just rearranged everyone's baggage in different ways. So he was a thief. He had to do something like stealing. But still, he was on pilgrimage. He was a devotee. So everyone must get some kind of mercy from Krishna. Okay, did you have a question, Maharaji?
No, I have the same question.
Okay. So, if you see someone taking water in Ekadasi, don't curse them. You rascal, sinful rascal. Sense gratifier, my God. I saw it. It was almost a quarter of a cup of water. Yamaraj, come get him. The social pressure is such that there's like this whole thing about, you know, what you're supposed to do and not supposed to do. So if you have to take water, do it secretly. That way the devotees will still love you.